is Ryan Miller, and for the past 15 years, I've helped hundreds of people to raise millions of dollars for their funds and for their startups. If you're serious about raising money, launching your business, or taking your life to the next level, this show will give you the answers so that you too can enjoy your pursuit of making billions. Let's get into it. In this week's episode, I bring on Yoav Vilner. Yoav is the founder and CEO of Walnut.io. Join Yoav and I as we talk about how he built a solution for sales and marketing professionals to massively boost their sales and revenue by building demos of the product without writing a single line of code. And as a result, Yoav created a blue ocean that resulted in a 700% revenue growth for his company. You don't want to miss this. Plus, Yoav walks us through what it's like to raise capital during a recession and how it can work to your benefit as a founder, helping us all gain the insights we need in our pursuit of making billions. Here we go.
Hey, welcome to another episode of Making Billions. I'm your host, Ryan Miller, and today I have my dear friend, Yoav Vilner. Yoav is the founder and CEO of Walnut.io. It's a software company that provides a no-code software solution for sales and marketing professionals around the world. Yoav's going to come on. He's calling all the way in from Tel Aviv. He's going to tell us everything about his story, how he has mastered the innovation cycle, and how he's built Walnut and his career as an entrepreneur from many years ago all the way up today. We're going to get into all the amazing stuff that he's put together in his life. So Yoav, welcome to the show, man.
Thanks for having me, Ryan.
Yeah, thanks for being here. So, Yoav, we've spoken a little bit, and I can tell you, I am so impressed with the work that you've done and everything that you've built. I know there's a lot of funders and founders around the world, and we all love innovation, and man, you've innovated something spectacular. Before we get into that, maybe you can walk us through a little bit about where did it start for you? I know there's a lot of people starting out now just listening to the show and just pulling those lessons. Maybe walk us through where it started for you, and then we can get into all the super cool stuff that you're doing today.
Yeah, sure. So I started my career kind of by accident. When I was 20-something, and I wanted to help a couple of startups with all of their growth efforts and tech marketing and growth hacking and all that buzzwords that came along soon after. And I joined forces with a friend that was talented in a couple of... It was experience working with a couple of other startups, and we joined forces and we launched the first and biggest tech marketing company for startups. We had about 600 companies working with us, a couple of dozens of employees, and offices in London and Manhattan and Tel Aviv. Yeah. That was kind of my first step in the industry.
Awesome. And, you know, my understanding is, you know, early in your career, you started that freelance marketing and you were, I believe, one of the first companies doing digital marketing in your area. Is that right?
Yeah.
So where did that take you? I mean, you've done some spectacular work for some really well-known publications like CNBC. Maybe walk us through a little bit on how did that go for you and what that experience was like and how it shaped you today.
Yeah, so while I was working as the CEO of that company for about 7 years, I was also invited to do all kinds of cool stuff. So some of the gigs I had was writing expert columns for the likes of CNBC, Forbes magazine, Inc. magazine, Entrepreneur magazine, The Next Web, and more, where I shared my nonsense about marketing startups with millions of people. Yeah. The other thing was being like some sort of a mentor or advisor, specifically about marketing and growth for accelerators, probably the top accelerators that exist. And that also gave me a lot of tools for my own. Like I was helping them, but that really helped me like establish myself as someone that really understands startups and technology and not just, you know, doing marketing from the outside. I was like building together with them, and I was planning together with them, and I saw a lot of different cases of startup that succeeded and failed and everything. Yeah. And that also helped me like shape myself as a soon to be tech founder.
Awesome. And you know that, so when you started out, you learned the, you did a fantastic job working in marketing and learning how to position products, reputation, all of these brands, all these things that are important for a startup. So you started to all these seedlings of an entrepreneur, learning how to market and get your message out and understand how to brand. And that took you to some of the most reputable publications on the planet. And you were able to participate that. You did such a good job. Now, I understand after that, you went on to, you worked for a company that helped to combat bullying against children. Maybe walk us through a little bit of that evolution.
Right. So I came back from New York to Tel Aviv after 7 years of being the CEO there, and I thought it's my time to do something new. And I joined a couple of very talented founding members as a chief marketing officer, and we launched a startup to save kids from bullying and pedophiles on social media.
Wow. Wow. I mean, that experience alone, I bet we could have a whole show on that. But, the message here really is, you know, you kept building, perfecting your craft, we'll say. You got into marketing. You understood different tech companies. And so you went from publishing to messaging to technology. Where you worked as a CMO at a company that leveraged AI to combat online bullying for kids. So you went through all of that, building your skills early on in your career. Where did it, and then it launched you into walnut.io. So maybe walk us through about how you went from kind of working for everybody else and then launching Walnut, and then, you know, exactly what the value is to the world that you're providing now.
Yeah, the value at Walnut is kind of something we did not even predict, like this whole thing turning into a real tech category and a landscape, something that we saw in front of our eyes for like less than 2 years worth of work, and very humble to be seeing that. So the other, you know, the other ventures that I had, like we talked about the two main ones. Obviously, there was a couple of more ventures where I was either like supporting as a founder or investing or stuff like that. But they were mine, but they weren't as scalable as I could imagine Walnut to be. And so I always thought of the next thing. And Walnut has just created something really great in the industry, and started from a wait list of 700 people, including VPs from Fortune companies, up until the company it is today.
Wow. And how long ago did you launch Walnut?
So we launched, like the product was launched, I think about a year and a half ago.
Okay.
For the first time, and it was the top rated product on Product Hunt for the entire week. And then nominated for the annual awards, which happened a couple of more times, as it seems. So we were very happy to see the perception of the market in our different launches. And so that was about a year and a half ago. I think the entire company launched about 2 years ago during COVID and during lockdowns, and when everyone thought we were crazy enough to raise a seed round, right? Yeah. Usually your instinct is not to raise a round during one of the most difficult crises in history.
That's right.
But we went for it anyway. And lucky for us, the stars aligned.
Wow, that's incredible. So, and I don't know if a lot of people around the world, I mean, clearly you do and I do, but the tech scene and the startup scene in Tel Aviv is quite impressive, isn't it? Yeah, so I think you mentioned like there's Wix, Fiverr, Lemonade, so on. There's a lot of these companies that are just global startups that are really taking off. You're certainly one of them. So that startup scene in Tel Aviv, that was a smart move by you. You're in New York, and I understand now that you've got kind of two headquarters, one in Manhattan, one in New York City. And so maybe you can walk us through a little bit about how you raised that seed, what that experience was like. I know there's a lot of fans around the world listening to be like, they're about to do the same thing. And, you know, like the good big brothers that we are, we'll put our arm around them, say, it's going to be okay. Don't cry too much. You'll get through this. But raising venture capital can be, even if, whether you're a funder or a founder, you're both raising money. It's an interesting process. What was that like starting out, launching your idea, going to venture capitalists and other investors? Maybe walking people through a little bit about that fundraising process.
Yeah, sure. So it's sure. easy to relate to what's going on now, right? Because it's a crisis all over again, I guess.
Yeah.
We're going to see them come in every couple of years.
Yeah.
And so I was working on the MVP with my co-founder and the CTO. We had a couple of customers on a wait list. It was still before that explosive launch that led us to 700 people. But doing the first batch of our seed round, it was just us working on the MVP. Mm-hmm. We raised our first $2.5 million from a fund called NFX in the Valley and a couple of angel investors like the CEO of Wix and Joe Montana's fund in Silicon Valley.
And we had
$2.5 million and we said, all right, that's a nice amount, especially during COVID, to kind of kick things off.
Yeah.
But things went extremely well and we rounded up to 6 million seed. A couple of months later, we raised our 15 million Series A. And a couple of months later, it was a 35 million Series B.
Wow. All right. So you make it sound so easy. I love it. And probably when you got a good idea, I mean, it's not a hard sell to VCs. They can see it. And you certainly have done this before. So, and you know how to market.
I would say, like, you know, if you ask yourselves the difficult questions before you set off to talk to investors and you're like, is this a huge, like, is this just like a, you know, a chill pill that we're giving our clients, or is it an actual pain that we're solving?
Yeah.
Or are we going to change their lives? Is this a company I would invest? And all kinds of questions that kind of will make it easy for you to know if you're heading in the right direction. You don't want to be spending the next decade working on something that the customers will not need. It will be a terrible journey for you.
That's right.
So we literally went through every validation process we could. We spoke to dozens of VP sales. We talked to a lot of different people from our industry before we decided this is going to be the next big thing.
Yeah. So that sounds like you were testing your prototype or your idea in the market. On our side as funders, we call that product market fit. So we're making sure that, yes, you have a product. Does it fit in the market? Are you building something that people want, right? A chill pill or a pain reliever? What are you providing? What's the value that you're doing? So you tested all of that. Do you feel like that was a big contributor to your ability to raise venture capital when you brought true market testing to your investors?
Yeah, for sure. Because the easiest part for Walnut while we raised our funds was when investors said, so we just want to run this idea by our friends and colleagues and network and see what they think.
Yeah.
And everyone were just blown away. Like, how come nobody's built this before, right? It doesn't make sense that in 2020 and the sales stack is such a red ocean. It just sounds too good to be true. And they found out we're literally the first ones to help solve this product demo thing from this angle of like letting the salespeople own the demo and not relying on anyone from R&D or product.
Yeah.
And so they were very convinced that it's like a big category that's about to launch.
Awesome. So so I love this. Many years ago, I was in sales, so I know what that's like. And being able to demonstrate, even if it's a virtual demonstration, whatever it is, your ability to close people when you can kind of help them see what you already see. And you bridge that gap for sales and marketing professionals where they're able to demo their product with a low-code solution. And so then the VCs go out, they test it. Everyone's like, oh my good. And one of the things that I think is important for entrepreneurs who are listening right now and listening to you up is you can't think that just because it's obvious to you that somebody must have invented it. Right. So Yoav went out and so all these investors are like, how has nobody done this? This seems so obvious. And Yoav, yet it wasn't. And it was to you, but to the market, as soon as you present it, everyone was like, this is incredible. How this is so obvious. Like, why didn't anybody do it? And you filled that gap, right? I don't know if that's a chill pill or a pain relief, maybe a bit of both. So I find that interesting, Yoav, and maybe you can walk us through some of your findings. When raising capital, because a lot of people are predicting we're going into potentially another recession. So now I think, you know, you should be glad if you haven't raised during that peak the last couple of years, because you're going to be dealing with down rounds potentially right now. So if you're just starting out, you may have an advantage, just like Yoav did. So maybe for those of us listening around the world, to your professional advice, walk us through what it's like to fundraise during a recession. What did you learn? What did you see? What worked? What didn't? Really round that out for us.
Yeah, that's a great question that a lot of people are facing these days. I would say, first of all, like, go for it, because investors really appreciate founders that don't let market downturns or recessions in their way. Like, if you're confident about your product and the problem you're going to solve, then you should have that confidence speaking to investors. And the second thing, just know that they're going to be naturally going to be more picky. So it's not just raising a couple of millions for a deck. It's actually fleshing something out, you know, building out like the first MVP, getting a couple of potential design partners, finding a couple of people for your founding team to show that other people believe in this and not just you. And eventually, like, just build something, build a story that's better than, you know, during peak times, everyone raises money everywhere, right? Because it's available. Mm-hmm. And so I think now it's going to be different. And now you have to show that there's a real, like, founder market fit, and you have to be in a better spot to raise those first couple of millions. But if you're not able, you know, like I said before, if you're not able to get to that spot, so there's something wrong probably with either you or the product or the audience or the timing. And so if you've managed to get to that spot, and it's for good reason, that's only the trigger for raising the seed, because otherwise you should probably think about something else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, one of the things you and I spoke a little bit offline, and you mentioned, you know, raising in a time of crisis, there's a couple of things. One, I'm totally putting words in your mouth, but budgets, some budgets will survive, and how do you fit into that? But I would say, and I feel like you emulated this, is you're able to show VCs when you're raising in times of, we'll say, crisis. That's a little dramatic, but in a recession, you're showing the VCs that you know how to persist in the face of certainty. And you certainly did that. So now that you've fundraised, you've raised all this money, I mean, you're north of 50 million, where walnut.io. You're creating your own category. Maybe walk us through that category and a little bit of how you found it and some of that advice as well.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
AI is changing the game of business. Will you be on the winning team? I'm Jordan Wilson, the host of the Everyday AI podcast and your coach to help you learn the X's and O's of AI. Artificial intelligence isn't just a new player in the game. It's a new sport altogether. So if you don't quickly put AI into play, your competitors will run up the score. I've spent my whole life building winning teams, from coaching basketball to working with big players like Nike and Jordan Brand. My next move? Helping you win with Everyday AI. Listen wherever you get your podcasts or on everydayaipodcast.com. Let's tap into AI together and put points on the board.
Yeah, so I tend to say that every founder claim to be building a category, right? That's your job when you're telling the story for the first time. But it's literally exploded right before of our eyes. Like, the amount of time that it took for us to be like the only player doing this and dominating it.
Yeah.
For a lot of small companies trying to imitate it, to Gartner releasing a blog post saying like this is the next big thing. This was all a very, very short period of time. And like I said, we're very humbled and kind of amazed to have seen this happen.
I think
what helped us like build this whole category is, first of all, you have to be first to market, otherwise it's meaningless. So that's one thing you need to keep in mind when you think about the timing to launch, because some founders would prefer building the garage for a year and until they feel the tech is perfect, which it won't be. Other founders are more like YC approach, right? You launch whatever you have, and even if it's a napkin with an idea, you just launch it and build a website.
Yeah.
And so there's a wide variety in between.
Yeah.
Our selection was to launch a lot of things fast and see how the market reacts. So if you're the first one to do it, you solve a real problem. You're really good at like telling the short story and the messages of exactly the pain that you're solving, and you have an MVP that's quite operating. So that puts you in a really good spot to kind of claim your category.
Wow. That's absolutely incredible. And my understanding is that launch has led to some pretty impressive sales growth.
Right.
So maybe walk us through what we all like numbers. How's that sales growth going?
That's pretty amazing. I guess I can talk about stuff that have already been out there. So so TechCrunch published that we had a 700% growth end of last year. So that was from half a year ago. So this year I hope will not be different. Like, we're really in a hyper growth type of situation. A lot of inbound, a lot of brand work. There's a lot of recognition for Walnut. Like, every month there's a couple of dozens of press articles that go up in all kinds of places. So a lot of discussions on LinkedIn, and that all leads to let's say a good pace of growth.
That's awesome. So 700% growth, boy, I'd love those numbers. Those are fantastic. You and all the investors that are believing you must be absolutely thrilled right now.
Yeah.
So what's that?
They were not sad at the end of last year.
Yeah, they didn't hate it. It was good. So now we built walnut.io. It helps. It's a no code solution for software for sales and marketing to build demos for clients. Nobody's growing by 700% without creating a massive amount of value. So no doubt that a lot of sales and marketing professionals are just so thankful to find your product, and your revenue growth is certainly a testament to that. So, as we round third base on our discussion, we're headed home, to use a baseball analogy. What are some of the lessons that I think as a founder, you've raised venture capital, you've been an executive, you've done so many things, you've launched a product. What are some of the advice that you would like to give on producing a successful product launch for a lot of our founders?
Yeah, so launching a product is kind of a terrifying moment, right, for the founders. Like, it's literally, for the CEO specifically, until you have a CMO that you can delegate the fault if something happens. Like, literally your job and the clients and your employees and your investors are all waiting for that launch day to see how it went and how the perception was. So first of all, go, like, be on top of it. Like, don't let anyone else manage the process. Like, you should be on top of it. If you're a founder, you should focus on the different product listing websites. And I think Product Hunt is probably the best one. You should have a newsletter all set in place. You should have a landing page where it's really, really clear about the messages you're trying to deliver to the audience. Not like a complicated story with animations and all kinds of crap that nobody cares about. Something very, very, very to the point. You better have a couple of very impressive social profiles by then. And not because you need, likes or followers or stuff in B2B, but just for that first impression, right? It's going to be weird for a prospect from a Fortune company if they check you out and your website and your LinkedIn, for instance, and there's zero like and zero engagement. That's going to be a real killer to your conversion rates. In that day, you should probably set a small campaign to kind of push everything that you can. If your product launch can come along some, announcing your seed or giving reporters any type of number, they like writing about that as a trigger. And so you can have one focus day where it's press about your seed round, product launch, and everything. And I'm very up for companies being very brave in that day and kind of going for all of the different fronts.
That's awesome. Wow. So that is incredible. Thank you for that. What about building a successful team? What advice could you give? What parting advice now that you've learned? How would you build a successful team if you had to do it all over again? Maybe let some of our fans around the world know a little bit on your secret sauce, how you did it.
Right. So, sometimes I look at the team at Walnut and I'm like, is this real? Are these people actually working with us? Because it's just, we're almost 100 people now, and the backgrounds and the level and the resumes and the amount of impact that everyone had in their previous places is really off the tops. And so for us, we had a couple of very odd decisions. The first employee that we had was our VP sales.
Yeah.
The reason being that we wanted to build a product for VP of sales. And besides the fact that he was very excited about this change that we want to bring to the industry, he was also some sort of building the MVP together with us while he was building the pipeline for our future sales. And that was a really good decision, even though investors were like, you know, this is not a classic hire right now. Like, there must be a good reason. But if you need someone to kind of add value to your startup, and it's not among the regular founders, so don't shy away from bringing someone, even if it seems weird to bring them, if you think that can help you kickstart from zero to one. Then we went to our networks and brought on a couple of more, you know, developers and the first people in, and just started going from there step by step.
Wow. That is absolutely astounding. So, you know, some of the lessons as we kind of wrap up our conversation, some of the lessons is launching in key areas, right? Tel Aviv, Manhattan, those are some hotbeds for innovation that are happening. And, you know, owning that message and making sure that you have congruency in your messaging to your ideal audience. And then obviously, as most venture capitalists would agree, have a product market fit, or as you also said, founder market fit. So I love that as well. So is there anything else that you would like to add before we wrap up our conversation?
I would just emphasize, this is a really great time to be raising seed. And even if people try and scare you and say you would get lower valuation these days, like, who cares? Just go for it. If your company succeeds, no one will remember the seed valuation. And if it doesn't succeed, nobody would care what the seed valuation was. So just go for it. It's a great time. Be confident and bring strong founding team, and reach out to people that can help you out.
I love it. Perfect. Well, you know, that's enough for me and Yoav, everybody. So in parting words, just to echo Yoav's wisdom, thank you so much for coming on the show. You know, just to summarize that, just get clear on your messaging. Engage your customers, find that product market fit, find that product founder fit. So look for a team that fits your product as well, like that VP of sales that you hired. And don't worry about fundraising during a recession. You have said, look, man, that actually might work in your benefit. You do these things and you too will be well on your way in your pursuit of making billions. Wow, what a show. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did. Now, if you haven't done so already, be sure to leave a comment and review on new ideas and guests you want me to bring on for future episodes. Plus, why don't you head over to YouTube and see extra takes while you get to know our guests even better. And make sure to come back for our next episode, where we dive even deeper into the people, the process, and the perspectives of both investors and founders. Until then, my friends, stay hungry, focus on your goals, and keep grinding towards your dream of making billions.